Hey everyone, welcome to Founders 365 with me, Stephen Haggerty. Today I'm joined by Jason Roberts, founder of Collider International. How are you doing, Jason?
Very well, thanks. Pleased to be here and good to be part of this process, so thank you.
No, thank you for your time. Thank you for being here. So I guess, as always, with most guests I do, the best way to get this rolling is for you to just give an overview of what the business does, who you serve, and that sort of problem that you solve.
Yeah, sure. So, again, look, pleased to be here. So, Collider International, we're a B2B marketplace. Ultimately, our primary goal is to connect buyers to suppliers. Now, when you look at the social media universe out there, a lot of organizations and a lot of platforms that are designed to connect people to people or people to things. But there's not actually a platform to really connect businesses to businesses. Now, by that, what I mean is, you know, you can look at Facebook. It's great for connecting friends together. You know, you have other platforms like Instagram. It's great for visual aids. Mm-hmm. And LinkedIn is great for jobs or people connecting the people community. But what we do with Collider is you find that there are companies who are trying to buy products or services, and there are companies who are trying to sell products or services, and never the two have they ever really met properly without that connection. So as a former head of sales myself, having spent 22 years in the city of London in the financial services sector, I always came across a problem of me trying to, as a salesperson, trying to find the opportunities out there in the marketplace. And as a result of some successful years and some difficult years, began to breed the idea of what the platform could do and how that would operate and work. And so I spent the last year or so devising and building the Collider platform to connect buyers to suppliers through the process of published tenders.
Love it. I mean, on the face of it, you kind of think, why hasn't this been done before? But what I'm curious about is, obviously, your background was in sales. So at what point did you think, this is the time for me to push forward for this? This is the time to create this platform to merge those two things together?
It's a great question. So I used to work for a rather large international technology organization, and I joined in November 2016. Now, what was interesting was one of the first phone calls I made was to my largest deal I ever closed. And ultimately, what happened was I just happened to be lucky and call that company at the time when they had issued the tenders and they were pretty much closing the window to tender application, tender bids. At that point, I thought, you know, if I'd called an hour later or a day later, I would have missed this opportunity. Now, yeah. As a salesperson, our output is pretty impressive. You know, we will make 1,300 phone calls a month. We'll make an additional, perhaps, or send maybe 600 emails to follow up on those phone calls. And we'll have maybe 60, 70 or 80 meetings per month as well. And it was just a matter of trying to understand that problem and then connecting the two together.
Exactly. I mean, as your background is in sales, even though you obviously been working within that technology environment, and this business is tech-based, right? It's a platform, it's that marketplace, like you said. How was that transition for you from sales, great guy at sales, to obviously founder of this business, founder of a tech company? How did you find that transition in terms of a personal basis?
Well, ironically, I worked for a number of startup organizations in the first place. So they were US companies with a good tech solution that came to the UK to break into the UK market. They had a track record and some success in the US, but nothing in the UK. So most of my roles, I recall, were to help to launch that business, to launch that proposition, to find the way to communicate the solution that had been sold successfully in the US, communicate that to the UK market. So I think I've got a number of experiences already that kind of underpinned what I'm doing now that allowed me to leverage all that experience to launch the Collider platform. Interestingly, however, on this journey, you also identify issues that you, or strengths that you haven't got, or weaknesses that you do have. And the need to kind of write a legal contract or to devise some sort of great image that kind of captures the story.
Exactly. Stuff that I guess beforehand other people took care of for you that you just didn't really see.
Yeah, but also because I was in startups, I actually did part of those processes as well. Mm-hmm. some organizations were a lot more mature and had actual teams and some great marketing people who I learned a lot from. And I'm terrible at marketing still today. I'm terrible. and so often you want to rely on other people to do those things for you. But you know, to any kind of company starting up or anyone thinking about starting their own business, those are some of the skills that you simply have to do it yourself. If you don't do it yourself, no one will do it and it won't get done and your business will fail. So it's been a great journey to learn and transition, identify a problem, leverage the skills that I've got or had and the experiences that I've seen, and then deploy them into the Collider platform.
What have been some of those big challenges that you've had to overcome? Obviously, you mentioned that the skill set perhaps that weren't to your level that you would normally have. What other challenges have you had to face in launching and just getting this service to that quality and that degree and level that you need it to be?
I would say my biggest challenge is being succinct. You know, the great thing about impressive copy is, or copy, you know, writing text that is conveying a message, is it should be done within as few words as possible. And I found that that's been probably one of my challenges that I've had to overcome, where you obviously rely on the marketing team who are experts in capturing imagination through very, very small, short, creative text and stringing words together. So I'm eloquent and I'm articulate, but I can't pull together often that message. So I rely on friends and networks to help me with some of those skills and challenges.
Amazing. And these are such common challenges that come up with founders. Like you said, when you're starting out, and perhaps if you've come from a background like yours, it's super difficult to first know what you're good at, because you might have been excellent at marketing, you just didn't know it, right? But obviously, you know that what your strengths and weaknesses are. For you as a founder now, and obviously this year has been a little bit tricky, but if we talk about that team environment, obviously in the past, you've with sales teams and even small startups, you've always got that team around you. You've always got those people around you. For you, when you talk about environment, or when we talk about environment, how have you built that up for yourself? How have you made sure that you are in the right environment, making sure that you're allowing yourself to be doing the right things at that right time?
Well, so, you know, one of the key things that I'm good at is networking. And I think people respect and they like me. So I'm often quite happy to give my time and my effort to people. And ultimately, I think when I've reached out, people have been willing to help me as well. As a result, it's meant that where I've needed help or assistance or guidance, people have been able to support me in those ways. But ironically, here's a key thing. One of the things, you know, I was approached by a former director of sales for a company. I had left the organization, and he asked me to come back and actually train his team on how to be as hungry as I was. And I turned down the contract. I said I couldn't do it, because you can't teach someone to be hungry. Now, in this climate, what you find, you know, in a post-COVID world, in a recession that we're in now, when we're approaching a Brexit, potentially with a no trade deal Brexit, people who are hungry are the ones who go out there to actually find opportunity and try to create opportunity. So I've always said that adversity really is the birthplace of innovation.
Yeah.
And I started my first company when I was probably 22, 23 years old, when I realized that I was going to have a child, my first daughter. Mm-hmm. And sometimes these problems or challenges that face you actually can propel you and push you to becoming great and doing successful and being, you know, achieving things that when you're in the comfort of a 9 to 5, you probably don't actually get to put yourself out of that comfort zone.
And I completely agree. I think with entrepreneurs and founders, we have a complete unique mindset when we see solutions and we see challenges. And often we just want to face them head on and not so much care, but we know the risks of, you know, being uncertain, being uncomfortable, and we're comfortable with being uncomfortable, that classic saying.
Yeah. I'm sure the SES say, get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly. I think Ant Middleton is just always uncomfortable, and he's quite happy with that, right?
He lives near me, by the way, ironically.
Oh, does he?
anyway, I won't give away where he lives or where I live, but...
Lovely guy. For you, Jason, if we now talk about sort of the challenges of creating a marketplace, getting these businesses on there and getting them interacting with each other. For you, was that just a sales challenge, or was that a new challenge because it's a new concept? Like you said, there wasn't really many other solutions like this. So you're obviously bringing this new thing to the marketplace. How was it in terms of just educating the businesses in terms of what this service can offer?
Well, the truth is that I don't actually educate the business at all. They actually teach me what they need. The critical thing, right, and Peter Jones said it very well. He said, the best businesses are ones that find something where there's a gap or a problem with the current solution, and they work on it to make it better. Mm-hmm. So innovation, I think, is what this Collider could be defined as. But, you know, when you speak to people and you survey people and you have conversation and you ask questions, you ask consultative questions, the whys, the what do you mean, the how do you mean, what you actually get is a lot more input, a lot more direction than you as any one entity could possibly find or muster or determine.
Yeah.
So I've found that obviously my target market are salespeople and procurement people. So by speaking to the both of them, you get to learn what their lived experience is. On the other side, I'm also catering to a problem that I personally have lived as well myself. So, you know, on some platforms, you know, if you try to reach out and sell to them, what happens, you tend to get knocked back immediately. Don't sell to me. Don't pitch to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know you. And as a salesperson, when you're looking at those platforms, you try to leverage that experience, that community. And so I basically identified that as being a problem that I'd come across, spoke to a number of, you know, tens, probably a few hundred actually, of procurement people and heads of sales, and understood what their challenges were. They mirrored mine. I didn't listen to my own experience, because that's actually what puts you down the wrong hole. Yeah. Wrong. I listened to their experience. And then with that, I used, I guess, ingenuity really to define and devise a solution that would really cater to the problems that they experience.
Exactly. And that's such the perfect way to do that and perfectly explained. And I think a lot of people, I think the key for that is you left your own your own baggage at the door, right? You went into those conversations with that open mind, wanting to learn, wanting to discover. And that is the key to really create a service that provides that solution. Because if you're only going to do it through your own lens, for example, there's so many things that we on our own miss and just don't understand and you know, comprehend in different ways. And I think you have to do that market research, let's put it that way. But from that space of, I'm going to leave my stuff on the table, I'm going to leave my stuff at the door, because then you get that real honest feedback, which is great.
Well, you've got to be very careful here, right? Because what happens is people can often be put off by that. The truth is this. There's space in the market. There's enough money out there for everyone to be successful. That's the first thing. The second thing is to never be afraid of competition. If you walk down the bread aisle of any supermarket, you're going to find 50 different brands of bread, but it's just bread.
It's just flour and water.
Flour and water. And so when you look at it from that perspective, I kind of like to encourage those who are entrepreneurs who may feel, I've got a great idea, but someone's already doing it. Yeah. Just that's fine. Find your market, find your audience, speak to your customer, and you'd be surprised at what you can achieve.
Yeah. And I think the valid point there is if someone has already done it, it means that there's a market for it. And, you know, it skips a lot of time when actually ideas have already been done before. And often if ideas have been around for a long time, they can become stale anyway. So if you're fresh, if you're, like you said, if you're hungry, then you have a very different way of looking at people's problems and solutions.
And that's exactly what COVID presented, right? It's provided an opportunity now where a lot of the large organizations with really heavy resources and big expenses, they've had to cut back on what they offer. Okay. What that means is the smaller organization now has the opportunity to invest during the recession and actually be successful and, you know, carve out a bit more of that market for themselves. So, you know, always look at recession and difficult times as an opportunity to be successful and to grow and to be successful.
I mean, some of the biggest companies now have all been born in recessions. And I think people forget that, because as a founder, as a person of leadership, your job is effectively to look for opportunities, you know, look for those opportunities, gap in the market, and see if you can fill it, see if you can do better than other people, which is great. For you, Jason, you're obviously someone that's hugely passionate, hugely hungry, let's put it that way, and very inspiring. So two questions that are completely different, but first question is, what motivates you? What gets you up every morning? Why do you still, like you mentioned, obviously when you started your first business, it was your first child. What motivates you now, and how do you make sure that you're on it every single day?
So one of the things I don't like, and I'll keep my language clean.
You can swear. I mean, we're all that answer.
Like bullshitters. Yeah. Right. Like, and I don't like people who are unaccountable. And what I've found, as someone who's very honest, and I'm very driven to the task at hand. I'm committed to the task. And the objective for me as a salesperson was to sell products, mm-hmm. not to pitch anyone up, but to make profits in my company that employed me. And what I tend to find, what I found was that in companies, a lot of times people play politics. And I don't like politics. I just rather you shoot straight with me and we can move forward. Whether I be right or wrong, we can move forward in a way that is honest and open. So what motivates me really to be my own boss is, first of all, my personal brand is to help people. That's what I like to do. It's what my brand is about. In actual fact, I've built a business designed to actually help companies make revenue, to help them find opportunities that they hadn't found before, and to help them close deals that they would never have found in the past. So what motivates me is being able to create this new market, this brand new product, to actually own something. You know, this is mine. I own it 100%. The code, the design, everything. That's kept me really motivated. I've got two daughters. I've got two weddings before.
No pressure then.
So, I think there are certainly personal things that motivate me as an individual.
But
I think, look, as a black male who came from Brixton, a single parent, where there's a lot of stereotypes around black individuals and stigma, negative mm-hmm. stereotypes, I want to also convey that whilst I've got a 22-year career, corporate career history, I worked for the likes of JP Morgan, the largest investment bank in the world. I've worked for large organizations. And I try to represent my people and positivity for the most part in those environments. I now move myself to a level where I can inspire not just young black men, but anyone who feels that they don't feel part of a network or a community, they can carve out their own space.
Yeah.
So for me, the motivation really is to be able to help and inspire people. And I think, you know, what keeps me going, God, I mean, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. I've learned through my first business about 20 things I should have learned. I wrote down 20 tips that really kind of helped me through this process. And so always learning and I'm just on it. I just want it.
Want it and you're on it.
Yeah, and inspire my kids.
That's it. You mentioned accountability there, and I love that because I think more and more people should. I think accountability is such a huge thing for just everyone, really, especially when you're building a business and things like that. So, if I come back to that previous question of environment, who do you keep yourself accountable to? Who do you sort of look up to? Who inspires you to carry on going and keep doing what you're doing, which you're doing obviously a great job at that.
Yeah, well, myself. I look in the mirror and am I happy? Am I pleased? Did I do the right thing? And I really feel that, things like role models, people don't want to be role models, right? They do what they want to do for themselves and people just happen to look onto it and like it. But you have to start with yourself. So I start with me. I know there are some days where I might do 12, 13, 14, 15 hour days. You know, it could be 14 days in a row. And then I'll say, you know what, I need to go to the golf course and just kind of let off some steam or go and have a few beers. But when I'm there, I feel guilty. I'm like, Jay, you should be back at the desk working. So I can only say that I keep myself accountable always, always, always.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because we then come on to that big debate about balance, isn't it? It's about balancing that work-life balance, the famous work-life balance. But also as an entrepreneur, we do have this overwhelming amount of guilt sometimes when we take our foot off the gas to actually enable us to go harder the next day, right?
Yeah.
For you, you know, going to the golf course, having a couple of beers, golf course or golf range?
Well, let's say pub.
Top golf then.
I will go and play, nine or 18. I will go to the range sometimes when I need to go over an idea.
The range is like the anger bit, isn't it? It's like where you just want to whack a ball and sort through some stuff in your head.
For me, the range is I've got a point of focus. I need to, if I find there's something wrong in my game, like my driving game right now is terrible, right? And so I try to fix it. And I apply the same logic to my business. What am I not doing well or what's not quite working? And I take that same kind of approach.
Yeah.
to compartment. Yeah, so you do need to get a balance. It's very true, but you also need to reward yourself for any success that you might have. And I think the entrepreneur who, for the, you know, is solely there just to work 24/7,
Doesn't work.
It's not healthy, and you burn out sooner.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this a couple of times on the podcast, but, you know, a couple of years ago, there was a huge theme about the hustle mentality where you have to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I think that's really shifted. And I think COVID has actually shifted a lot of founders, a lot of entrepreneurs, because they've spent more time with their family. They've spent more time at home. And it's actually allowed them to realize, one, what they're doing it all for, and two, what that balance actually looks like. And I think what's going to be interesting is, if people keep up that nice balance, because I'm a firm believer that you can have both. You can have the balance in the personal life, the relaxation, the positives, all that kind of stuff, and also work harder than someone else that isn't perhaps doing that.
Yeah, but also, look, the key thing is you have to have your own measure of success, right?
Yeah.
How do I 100%. Measure success? That's the question. And how does, you know, Sarah Jane or Joe Bloggs measure success? We could be on completely different levels of consider as being successful. So it's okay to be true to yourself. It's okay to not look at anyone else. I mean, I will take an inspiration from people, but I don't look at them and measure myself against them. For me, my goal is, you know, I've got a 16-year-old and a 10-year-old. So I'm thinking, right, in about 10 years' time, I've got to pop a few quid for a wedding. So what does my plan look like to get to that point where I can do that? I've got university fees to pay for. What do I need to do to make sure I can deliver that? And then I've got a retirement to think about. And as you get older, you do think about these things. So the measures of success, I think, are what can drive and focus you. And you yourself will know, if you're going to be honest with yourself, if you really put the work in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like you said, we are the only ones that can define our own success. And I think that a lot of people struggle with that, especially in the early days of business. But the ones that do succeed, or the ones that have got perceived success, are the ones that have figured that out, or the ones that have figured out, actually, I need to do this to define my own success, which is perfect. One of my final questions to you is, what's next for you? What's the next plan for the next 12 months? Where are you going? What are you doing? What's coming up?
So what's fantastic with the Collider platform itself is we are in the process now of onboarding all these procurement buyers who are actually out there looking for various reasons, whether it be for regulatory reasons or because Brexit is pushing down a certain route. We're working out with a lot of these buyers, to actually to onboard them. In line with that, we're also working with identifying the suppliers who actually are looking to make a few quid from selling their products or services. These companies have lost sales teams or sales functions, but still are trying to keep the lights on within their business. And they're trying to get the same output of pipeline generation, but have no means to do that. And the Collider platform will be doing that. So the next 3 to 6 months for Collider, we're actually going to be onboarding the European data as well and European opportunities. The idea for us is we want Collider to be a platform where particularly UK companies can come and actually find opportunities to sell their products. We then open it up in the next 6 months to then have them find opportunities across the UK, Europe, and then the US as well.
Yeah.
So ultimately, anyone who is doing a B2B service, and this is critical for what we do, we are a B2B platform. We're not B2C or C2C. We are B2B. Any company who provides or sells a service, we want them within our platform because ultimately that's where they're going to find opportunity. We want to be able to build a team. So we want to begin to kind of, you know, really contribute to the UK economy by employing people as well and kind of taking people and giving them an opportunity to be innovative as we start a team from the ground up.
That's amazing. And Jason, I mean, I have zero doubt that you're going to achieve this and a hell of a lot more. You are one of the most driven people I think I've spoken to in recent months. And I look forward to just watching from afar and watching you guys grow and build that team and just conquer some new heights that I'm sure you don't even know about yet, which is the exciting part.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And, you know, I do like a beer as well. So
we'll have to meet up for one of those.
Yeah, look, the key thing really is balance, and whatever balance looks like, and it can't be all play and very little work because you're not achieving anything. And it's okay for people to want to do a 9-to-5 and be safe in that environment. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But there's some people out there who hopefully are listening to this cast, this podcast today, and they're thinking, you know what? I've got an idea. You know, I'll do it in tandem with my 9-to-5 and grow it slowly. It hasn't got fixed at all. So if I can inspire, engage, discuss, talk, connect to anyone who's got a question around entrepreneurialism, really happy to share my experience and to give that, you know, proverbial kick up the ass where someone needs to say, you know what, I'm gonna go and do it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, then I guess this brings me very nicely onto my final question. You're a pro at this already, but how do people get in touch with you? How do people find out more about the business?
Well, I'd really welcome anyone to visit the business. The website is www.kaleida.co. That's the Kaleida platform, and there's some information there. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm quite visible on LinkedIn. I try to be and connect to and engage with people. So it's Jason Roberts. So people can contact me. If they want to email me as well, jason@kaleida.co.
Perfect. Jason, listen, you have been a fantastic guest. Thank you so much for sharing your story, sharing your journey.
Thank you very much.
Like I said, I wish you all the best in the future.
Man, it's been great. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone else, for listening and watching. This has been Founders 365.